Jones.
And Mike. Real radio for real people who are real enough to realize they really still have a few things to figure out. Jones is a hockey-playing, city-living, vegan bachelor who practices transcendental meditation when he's not biking to shows and Cub games. Mike's a beer-swilling, married father of four from suburbia. His motorcycling, marathoning, and martial arts are pretty much on the shelf while he limos children all over town to their activities for the next decade.
Sound familiar?
It's, you know, shit dudes say.
About family,
women,
philosophy,
politics,
history,
people,
money,
pop culture,
kids,
fighting,
business,
life. Join the conversation.
312-957-7210.
Hashtag Jones and Mike. 24/7 worldwide at jonesandmike.com.
This hour, Mike Adamley makes us want to get our heads checked for liking football.
Jones teaches Mike how to be a daddy.
And the two-minute survey to save humanity.
This is Jones and Mike.
Jones and Mike.
Jones, it's great to be with you again. I've missed you.
I've missed you as well. I've missed this whole scene, everything about it.
You still smell the same.
I do. If anything, I am consistent.
What is that? What is that, a cologne? Is that some sort of a body spray or wash?
It's just a familial must. It's what Jones men have smelled like for time and eternity.
Millennia, familial yes. Must.
Yes.
Did you say musk or must?
I think I said must, but I meant musk.
Like Elon? Like the Tesla guy?
No, like whatever, whenever someone gives off that just natural scent. Isn't that a musk?
Sure, sure.
So I give off, it's a familial musk.
And your father smelled this way?
Yeah. Yeah, I actually, from time to time, I'll smell my own clothes, or I'll take off sweaty clothes, and I'll smell my sweat, and I'll smell just like Jimmy used to when he was a man.
Really?
Just like him. And I didn't smell like that when I was younger. It kind of happened after 30, 35, I started to smell like him.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. I mean, I guess if I had to attribute a smell to my old man, it was like whatever his aftershave was, which I think was like, it was like some green stuff. It wasn't like Old Spice.
Brute?
It was like, I don't know, man. Not Speed Stick. Maybe I'm thinking of Speed Stick. That was kind of green. That was kind of 70s-y.
Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, beer. So whatever his aftershave or deodorant was, plus whatever beer he was drinking at the time. So like Hams for a while, Old Style for a while, and then he ended up as a Bud man, maybe the last 20 years. So that would be my familial musk. Mm. I'll have to ask my old lady what my musk is, see if she could put markers on it.
This could be a dangerous question.
It could be. So I'm glad to see you. I haven't been in close proximity in this way with you in a while. And so a lot of our communications, most of them, as you know, have been digital, have been texts, have been phone calls, have been, we're not Facebook friends. That's a matter for another day. We won't get into it now. Not now.
Not ever.
Maybe ever, but not now. But we do share the Jones and Mike Facebook page, so we kind of communicate through there.
That's true.
I'll share something that I think other people could dig, and then, you know, it's also my way of kind of showing you.
Mm-hmm.
But this week, I don't think I shared anything on this topic on the Jones and Mike Facebook page at facebook.com/Jones and Mike. I just kind of did a little mini rant on my own kind of real estate, and it pissed some people off. I like to take on people who let their kids play football. I think it's one of the dumbest things that you could ever do for your child. And I'm very unashamed and uncensored in that way. I tell people that they're idiots for letting their kids play football. And you know this about me.
I would be on that, even though I am childless, I believe I would be on that same track as well.
It's like child abuse, I think. And I think that you've even said, like, look, unless it's your only way out of the ghetto, there's no reason to let your kid play football, because you're literally, you're giving your kid brain damage now.
Oh, concussion after concussion. A sport, name another sport where the head is a point of contact. In so many instances, I know you're not supposed to hit a guy now in the head. However, that happens so many times. Even when you go to tackle, you're supposed to get the helmet right to the side of the shoulder and under the guy's arm. Like, you're still leading with your head towards something. Maybe you're not supposed to hit head on head, but you're still supposed to lead with your head.
That's
to hit
right.
something and bring it to the ground. It's insane.
Right. And so this week, he's been the topic of my ridicule and mockery over the years because he's not good at being a sportscaster. Mike Adamley, Chicago guy, Northwestern guy, Northwestern football guy, turned sportscaster, has been on NBC5 in recent years, but just around for decades, and just not good at being a sportscaster. And up until this week, I just mocked him for it. But this week, he did an interview with Peggy Kaczynski. He probably calls her Patty Kaczynski, unfortunately, if he can even get that much out of his mouth these days. He did an interview with her where he revealed, I guess, the reason why he's been off the air for the last year. I didn't even miss him, unfortunately.
I didn't realize he was gone either.
Yeah, yeah. He revealed, hey, I've been off the air for a year, and I'll never be back, and here's the reason. I have what doctors believe to be CTE-induced dementia. And I'm in bad shape. And not only did he earn my sympathy, and not only do I feel regret for mocking him for years, but I admire him and I admire his family for going out on this limb, because he really he exposed himself to be, you know, a step away from drool cup.
He did. I mean, really, when you see the cuts of this video, like, he just looks, the eyes are dead, the voice is really quiet, and it did take guts to do this, and to put, at least locally, I don't think he's known well enough, really, nationally, to put a national face on this, but locally, to put a face on it, I do think that takes guts. You know, years from now, fathers will be able to look at one another on a sideline, or while they're watching their kids kind of go through youth sports programs and go, man, I don't know that I really want my kid doing this. I mean, you see what happened to Mike Adamley. You at least have now, we now all have that one point of reference that we can go back to. And it's something that you would want to hide from. I mean, who wants to admit that, you know, they're in that, you know, they're now suffering from dementia?
Oh, without a doubt. Well, up until now, and I know Jim McMahon from the Bears came out, and he's done some fairly candid interviews where he admitted, if you walk into a room and you forget why you walked in, that's my life all the time. I have no short-term memory. I forget things all the time.
Yeah. Ugh.
And it's impacted my life, and it's all because of football, and he's been open about it. But this was the first time that I've ever seen, like, that stark visual evidence that football is just so incredibly stupid to
right.
play.
And it's funny, you're right. When you see McMahon talk about it, there's still a pop in his voice. There is still some light in his eyes, although it's harder to see it through the sunglasses, but there is still something there. There was a certain just air of defeat with Adamley, and I'm not trying to pile on by saying that.
No,
but
football.
You just saw him.
That was a good football reference. I like that. I like that.
That's what I do. I'm a professional.
So we'll play a couple of cuts from the Adamley interview and talk a little bit more about it. I took on the hashtag no fanny packs. Do not let your kid have to be like Mike Adamley and wear a fanny pack that has all of his basic, like, identification in it just in case he gets lost in the world. He's like a child.
It's insane. It is insane.
Jones and Mike. Hey, it's Mike. Please go to jonesandmike.com/survey and take the 2-minute survey we've put together for you. Trust me, it'll be the most satisfying 2 minutes you have all week. We are remaking Jones and Mike in your image. But to do that, we need your input on what you like, what you don't, and what we could do differently, more often, and better. It only takes 2 minutes, and the survey you take today could change your life tomorrow. Go to www.jonesandmike.com/survey. Thanks. Jones and Mike. So I had my best ever fantasy football year this year, Jones. A third place finish for Team Cornholio. That's the name of my team.
If I really knew what was at stake, I would really dive into the congratulations. I mean, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. I mean, it's been a long, hard struggle. I think I was last year out of 10.
Oh, that's good. Hey, to go from 10 of 10 to 3 of 10, that is an accomplishment.
That's right.
Market improvement.
I'm knocking on the door. And I celebrated by, you know, again, publicly ridiculing people who let their kids play football. I do want people to not let their kids play, or, you know, certainly don't make your kids play football. Don't let them.
And I think we're going to see that day. I'm telling you, I think over the next 10, 20 years, you're going to see the participation in youth football drop off severely. Well, I don't think the NFL is going away.
Well,
I think the Super Bowl is still always going to be this national holiday.
I don't know. I don't know about that. So this year, you know, the story surrounding the NFL was a fairly significant decline in viewership. I want to say like down almost 20% in viewership. Does that ring a bell? 17%, 20%?
I thought it was
like
more a 10, but still, 10 to 20, regardless.
Double digits.
That's big.
Double digits. Okay, so we'll downgrade it to 10% reduction, but significant enough where, you know, there's been some hand-wringing. Because it's a $10 billion league, we're told, you know, annually gross revenue generating league. And so 10% of a billion, you know, of $10 billion is a lot of coin, you know, if we were to translate into dollars and cents like that. So, you know, a lot of people have speculated that it was due to white America being angry at Colin Kaepernick taking a knee during the national anthem.
Which I can't buy for a second.
No, but it fits into the narrative that, you know, everything in America now is whites and blacks hating each other. And whites being racist and the right-left paradigm is all about racism and divide and la la la. And I would speculate and postulate and offer to you, sir, that the decline is due to people not being able to support a product that they view as dangerous. They have moved on to doing different things with their family in terms of the sports their kids play, and they encourage them to play. And just football is not a part of their lives anymore, either because of a moral, you know, objection to the physicality and to the, you know, the Mike Adamleys of the world, or just by virtue of they've gotten their kids into other sports, and now they're doing those things on Sunday afternoons and not sitting around watching football.
I think it's the latter. I think that's the big thing. I think there are some people who have stepped away from the game and went, I cannot watch these men just batter each other in the head and destroy their lives. There's some of those people, but I think that's a small, small number. I think it's just simpler than that. I think there's a number of parents out there like yourself that are looking at your kids and going, you're not playing football. Mm-hmm. The kids come to accept that. They pick up another activity. And if you don't play football, or there was no possibility of you playing football, and it was because your parents had given you some kind of sense that there was something bad about it, that there's something detrimental, and you stepped away from it, it's not going to really become an important thing in your life. You know, really, do you see Dom growing up and getting into football and caring about it? Maybe even the way that you and I did, even though we didn't go out and play high school football, we were never told not to do it or to stay away from it, or that it was in any way detrimental. Now that message is out there, and if kids aren't participating in it, then it's just, they move on to whatever they're doing and what's important to them. And I think you're going to continue to see that.
Right on, man. Well, and then so ironically, I've gotten him into soccer. I've steered him, and I flat out have told him, don't even ask. You will never be allowed to play football. Why, Dad? The reason is because it damages your brain. Period. The end of story. That's it. You can play soccer instead. And I guess the irony is that is the sport, I guess, that leads to the most emergency room trips due to concussion. Allegedly.
Yeah, you know, I've heard that, but I still have, I just have a hard time believing that. I think obviously you're battering that ball with your head several times during the game, or there are a clash of heads that happen. But I think football is still a bigger deal because there's almost no way to even practice, just practice without clashing heads and taking your head and trying to ram it through a wall of men. I mean, it's insane.
Well, and that's the, you know, it's always the big hits, the safety coming over, the middle of the field and head hunting and taking out a defenseless wide receiver. It's part of the reason why Americans love the game and watch the game in big numbers. But that is the concussion that people associate with CTE. But I believe that they're showing that now it's really the linemen and that constant little bursts of concussion, those little mini concussions are the ones that are doing it over time.
Sure, because those mini concussions still aren't that many. You know, you have two huge guys just play after play after play just clashing into each other.
Right.
It has got to have an effect. And there's even, I think even younger kids are getting this message as well. I know one of my buddies, he has a son who was forbidden from playing football, got into baseball. And the kid was a little upset at first, but after a year or two, turned around and saw, like, I think he saw that Will Smith concussion movie. And he was like, Dad, thank you for not letting me play football.
Really?
And I think there are some young, and he's still just a high school age kid. And I think they're starting to see, like, yeah, that's not necessary for me. I'm going to take a pass.
Yeah. So Mike Adamley has to go around town, I guess, with a fanny pack. You know, in this interview he did with Peggy Kaczynski on NBC5, where he revealed that he has final stage CTE, they believe. There's no way to diagnose it until you die and they crack open your skull and take a look at your noggin. But they believe he's got CTE. He definitely has dementia, and he has to wear a fanny pack with his ID and his wallet and his phone in it because he gets lost when he's just walking around town, and he needs to, like, you know, I guess have a way for people to tell him how to get home.
He even noted that sometimes he may forget his name.
Yeah.
So he knows to go into this magic bag around his belly.
Yeah.
And retrieve his name.
So, you know, up until now, we've had Mike Webster and we've had Dave Duerson, and we've had guys who have killed themselves by
Junior Seau,
shooting themselves in the chest to kill themselves because they can't take life anymore. You know, as a 46-year-old millionaire, you know, that has always had everything and now has, like, nothing, like, can't even function at all. They kill themselves by shooting themselves in the chest so that their brains will be preserved. And in every case, CTE has been found in their brains. And now I want to say that the studies are showing that, like, 95% of all tested football players have CTE.
Frontline did a show on CTE, and there were some scientists who did a test of 79 NFL players' brains. 76 came back with CTE. Then there was another Boston University study where there were 68 CTE brains that were studied. Six of the brains had CTE, and these people had only played high school football. Nine of them had had CTE and went as far as college. But you just break that. Now, it's a small sample size. Scientists and mathematicians would just blow that out of the water and say that's too small a sample size to read anything into. But if you're just to take those numbers on their face value and expand it out to a larger, you know, encompassing. Yes, and to include all of football, all of youths playing football in America.
Yeah.
That means that every time you're watching high school football game, someone on the offensive side of the ball and someone on the defensive side of the ball is going to wind up with CTE.
Yeah.
They're out there right now as you're watching the game.
Yeah, I think parents want to fool themselves into saying, like, no, it's just like the NFL people. Like, they do it for so long mm-hmm. that, like, eventually you rot your brain. And my kid's only going to play till, you know, he's in 12th grade.
And that's true. You're in more danger if you play, if you go as far as the NFL. But would you take a chance on your kid being a 1 in 10 chance of winding up with CTE?
Yeah, without a doubt, dude, without a doubt. So this is Mike Adamley in this interview with Peggy Kaczynski talking about what a typical day is like for the man who, you know, prior to this, he made headlines whenever he would do an Ironman. He would do the whatever 190-mile race, the
190,000-mile
race in, like, Hawaii, where you run a full marathon, you're on the bike for like 12 hours or something, and then you swim for 3 hours, right? You've done triathlons. What is it?
Yeah, I think it's, I want to say it's a 2.5-mile swim. I want to say it's a 112-mile bike.
Oh, my God.
And then you run a marathon.
And then you run... And then the nightcap is running a marathon.
Yeah, I think it's a hundred. I want to say it's 140.6 miles.
And that character, Adam Lee, he's been doing them up until a couple of years ago. So into his 60s, this guy was in such phenomenal shape. Ugh. He was doing Ironman, and now he's making news. And this is him saying what his typical day is like now.
Sometimes you feel great. Always a little nauseous, but, you know, next thing I knew, I'm going someplace to work out, you know, and that's kind of all I do, and sometimes it's all I can do, you know. I'm great at taking the garbage out. I can take dishes out of the dishwasher and put them away, but, you know, can I say, and, you know, I just don't want to get in anybody's way.
Good Lord. I mean, can you imagine?
Like a shell of his former self.
You were a Division I football player. You went to the NFL. You went in and had a successful broadcasting career. And this is how it ends.
Yeah.
I mean, if that doesn't, just hearing that guy, if that just doesn't sound to you of what a man sounds like when he is a shell of himself, that is the perfect example of a man who is now a shell of himself.
Yeah, and just the look in his eyes, like vacant and beaten down. And I don't think that was an act.
No. I don't think that was an act at all. And that's why I do think it's courageous that he's stepping up and he's saying, hey, look, I've got this thing. Because it's not like this is an extremely proud moment for him. It's not like it's anything he should really be ashamed of. He didn't really know what he was doing to himself at the time. But now that you can see what he was doing to himself, what he was doing to himself for all those years. And then even when you think about, when he got into broadcasting, then he went into this American Gladiators.
That's right.
And even participated in some of the stuff where guys are battering him in the head with giant Q-tips and firing like Nerf missiles at his skull.
That's
like,
right.
He continued to batter his skull.
If he didn't, you know, get embarrassed by being with Joe Theismann doing the play-by-play of Zap with her bulging biceps, shooting people, you know, with tampons out of a gun, then nothing will embarrass this guy.
Yeah, I was more of a Nitro fan. But
you were a Nitro. Well, yeah, he did kind of have a weird ethnicity. Maybe he was Cherokee. Maybe he was Latino. You didn't know.
Yeah, he was mysterious. That's what I liked about him.
But you definitely wanted to be cuddled by him. Spooned, I believe, is the phrase that pays.
He's powerful.
He is powerful. I was a Zap guy. I was Team Zap. That was her name, right?
I think it was, yeah.
Oh, man.
I could never get
into that.
There's
something about those muscled women that just go...
No.
So after all of this, as much as I want to give him the Man of the Year award, this is what Adam Lee says about football's role in his current state of affairs.
Well, when a doctor tells you that it is, okay, I'll buy that.
Is it caused by football?
But it's not always. I mean, it's from what I've read... And what I've talked to people about, you know, people and, you know, doctors and what, it's accumulate. Again, I think if you talk to 99% of the players, would they do it all over again? Yeah, I would. I would. A game that understood, you know, what was really happening to a lot of players and they didn't know it. And now that they know it, they're trying to do things about it, and that's great.
Yeah, that's great.
There's a part of me where I want to kind of just step back from hammering him on it and just think, well, he's not capable of thinking this through. Though his former Northwestern teammate and brother in journalism, Rick Tellender, I remember reading a book he wrote years ago called The 100-Yard Lie. It was about college football. And he kind of ripped on college football and was critical of his own experience as it was kind of this meathead adventure. But then at the end of the book, for all he said about it, he's like, but would I do it all over again? In a heartbeat.
What?
And it's like, why? What the hell are you talking
Dude,
about?
Dude, the tale has to be crazy good.
I can't.
For that 15 years between like age 12 and age 30.
Oh, but just imagine knowing what you walk into.
I must have CTE. That's not 15, but at any rate.
But knowing what you walk into. Think of Mike Adamley's day. He is anchored.
I just take out the garbage and I try not to be
noticed. He goes through life anchored to nothing. Unless someone takes him somewhere, he doesn't go anywhere. Maybe he wanders out of the house on occasion, but he must have a fanny pack or else he'll forget where he lives. Or if he forgets where he lives, someone can help him get home, or he'll forget even who he is. He could sit there, even in this interview, you know, he admitted, I could, you know, but there's a chance that when you get up, Peggy, talking to Peggy Kaczynski, when you get up and walk out of the room, I might not remember that we had spoken. And it's, how do you go through your day that there's nothing you can build off of? Everything is just so purely in the moment that one minute you're sitting down to dinner and then the next you've forgotten that you've eaten.
I don't know. That sounds kind of blissful, actually.
I think it sounds maddening. I don't. Living in the moment is still being able to anchor yourself to the things that you've done throughout the day, the relationships that you've had, the phone conversations that you've had. If everything is literally a brand new minute to you, that has got to be madness.
And again, I'm going to have to take him at his just by looking at him that he's not enjoying it. But I think that there's a frustration and an expectation that we all have within us that we should be, you know, doing more or whatever. And when you're just in the moment and you're literally just about eating and sleeping and like whoever you're hanging around with, spending time with them or whatever, if we just let go of that expectation, we probably would feel better about it. So
I think this is too far on the opposite end of the spectrum that you could sit, like you woke up this morning, you maybe had breakfast and then you'd go sit down and read a book. And after 30 minutes of reading the book, you'd get up, walk to the kitchen, forgot that you had eaten breakfast, and then forgotten that you had read the book and forgot what you had read. Like, that would be maddening. You're not anchored to anything. He's just like a chip in a whirlpool. But yet the thing that put him in this state, he would go right back to it and do it all over again. I can't wrap my mind around.
So you're going to give him a pass and say, yeah, he's not of his right mind. But on the one hand, we can't give him credit for coming out and voluntarily, you know, humiliating himself or, you know, asking for people's sympathy or getting a sympathy. Maybe he's not asking for sympathy, but he's certainly the recipient of sympathy now.
Sure.
And he's certainly spent his whole life as a powerful guy, strong guy. People looked up to him, et cetera. And now he's going out, you know, this is going out on a whimper, right? So
yes.
He was willing to give him, you know, go out on that limb. So we can't give him credit for that. And then on the other hand, give him a pass for not really knowing what he's saying when he's saying, I don't blame football.
Well, I don't think, well, it's not that. I think you can be critical of him saying, here's where you can be critical of him for saying, I don't blame football. Absolutely. But when he goes, I would have done it all over again because I would have been aware of it and I would have done things differently. That's where he's not, I don't think he's of sound mind to understand that, look, jostling of the brain is jostling of the brain. We can talk about the improvements, the technological improvements to equipment in football, but it's not still strong enough to really address the issue and what's going on. I could see where he would think, oh, if I had known it at the time, I would have done things differently. And it's like, well, maybe you can't do anything differently. And I don't think he's able to really grasp that maybe there isn't anything that any of these guys can do.
So I have a couple of questions for you, mon frere, and they are as follows. Do you believe that it's always been somewhat known in football culture that what they're doing is inherently stupid? And that is why coaches, dads, America, our culture has not only ingrained it with this machismo and rewarded it with this almost mythical, heroic, you know, superhero type status and stature, you know, its participants. But they've also really adopted the imagery of war, of brotherhood. You know, it's not uncommon to hear football players be like, you know, you got to trust the guy next to you. We're going to battle together.
We're going into the trenches.
And it feels like that's, you know, the same type of cliche stuff that like generals give to the troops that they're sending out to the front lines to pep them up to go do something that's totally stupid and that otherwise a normal human being wouldn't do. But the combination of youth plus that machismo mentality whips them into the fervor to go do the thing that a normal human being wouldn't do.
No, I don't feel that they understood that they were doing mental damage to them. I don't think, well, we'll treat it like they're soldiers off to war. We'll pep them up and they won't be aware of the mental damage that they're doing to themselves. I think a lot of that war pep talk that you always see, hey, you're going in the trenches. You guys, we're soldiers. We're going to war. You got to trust the guy next to you. I think that was to create a sense of physical heroism, because you could visualize like soldiers going into war and we're like that. But that they knew, like, and we also know that they're doing themselves a grave mental disservice. And this jargon will get them through that. No, I think this whole concussion thing is really something that has happened in the last few years that we're really starting to see. And it's becoming this thing that's almost next to impossible to get around.
Should I not be preachy when I tell like people like, yeah, you really, I enjoy watching your kids play football, but that's for you. That ain't for my kids.
I tell you what,
my kids are more important.
No, I think talking about football in this manner is more important than talking about national politics, because this is something that's happening to kids all around us.
This is realer, and we can actually do something about it.
Well, yes. I mean, fine. You can freak out about what's going on in the West Bank or what's going on in Paris or what's anywhere in the world, but what are you really going to do about it? Meanwhile, you're having your neighbor's kids all around you going out and getting concussed every single week. This is actually something where if you really went public with it, really made people to really challenge them on it and challenge one another, there could be a positive effect that would really come out of this. So no, I think it is important. I think it is important to challenge a parent and go, okay, why football? Like, why? Tell me, why football? You would definitely challenge someone if you saw them like rolling up a joint for their 14-year-old kid.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't you challenge them? Like, hey, wait, your kid's picking up a football. Is he going to football? You're comfortable with that?
Yeah,
really?
I would definitely not be as upset about the joint, honestly. So I have two family members who let their kids play football. And one, she insists that her children will be, and she's even been like, they're going to be more successful than you. She said like snarky things to me. And I'm like, I hope so. I'm not feeling
it. And that's, but regardless, that's not even the reward.
Well, what I'm saying is what she means, she wants them to be lawyers and they're going to be more successful than me, which I think you got to set the bar higher. But that's just me. I'm very self-deprecating in that way. And then she also, on the other hand, she'll let them play football. And it's like, well, what are you doing? That doesn't even compute. I don't understand. Then the other relative is like super smart, like in the sciences, learned, getting, you know, life learner, values knowledge and the brain, and wants her kid to play football because of the social attributes that go along with it, allegedly. Like, he wasn't social until he played football. Now she feels like it's good for his social life. But on the other hand, she like is all about the brain. And she almost has made comments that she's powerless to stop him from playing football, too. So it's a very weird thing, and I make comments. I do, because it's like, how do we not speak out?
Yeah, you know, no, I think it's something that you can speak out about. I mean, I don't have kids, and I will talk to my friends who have kids and say, oh, yeah, so they're playing this, but what do you think about football? Would you ever let them play football? Oh, I don't know about that. You know, we have this conversation. I think it's totally appropriate to challenge parents on that. I mean, it's something where it's like, it's one thing if I went to critique someone's marriage and it's like, well, you're not married, you don't know. But to know that football is damaging for a developing brain or a fully developed brain, you don't need to have played football to know that.
Yeah, yeah.
And to watch like millions of kids go off and do this. I remember a couple years ago, I went to see a friend of mine. Her kid was playing high school football. And he was one of the better players. And he's flying up and down the field. And through the course of the game, he got dinged a couple times and he was picking up some injuries. I could tell, eyeball test, he's not right. He's not right. He's not able to move. They should get him off the field. And they kept trotting him back out into the field. When he would come off and get treatment, it was like on this like half broken little table where they're trying to lay him out and like fix his legs and his knees, and the table was collapsing. And I'm like, what is going? Like, this is very serious. This kid could pop an Achilles, a knee, anything at any moment. But it was all in that moment of just get him out in the field, be a soldier, win the game. And it was just like, the kid's 16 years old. What are you doing?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so you're letting me off the hook that it's okay to be mildly preachy publicly about this, my drive to let people or encourage people to use the hashtag no fanny packs. Forever? Is that a good hashtag? No.
I think that'll get lost. I don't know how many people really saw the Adam Lee piece.
Well, right. All the more reason. See, here's the thing. The only people that really will talk about this are sports people. Rick Tellender, for years, prattled on about this. And I say prattled because it kind of got annoying. It was like every week. But now I'm kind of giving these guys some slack. Like, I don't know how a Rick Tellender or a Rick Morrissey in the Sun-Times, I don't know how these dudes, how they continue in their profession, knowing what they know. I even feel guilty, like maybe I shouldn't even watch football anymore. It seems crazy to say, because I do love it. I do love watching other people's kids play it. But I'm thinking, like, how do I, in good conscience, support this in any way?
No, it is a fair question. It is a fair question. And I only say it's a fair question because I can't really come up with an immediate answer to it.
Will you continue to support?
I think just out of routine, I probably through the next year will watch it. But I do have to say my love of the game has definitely waned over the last few years. I mean, I really just keep it to only Bears games on Sundays. And I have a general sense of what's going on in the league, and that's outside of it. But I used to really be all about it. And that definitely has fallen off. I mean, if you were to rank the four major sports, it's probably coming in at number four.
Really?
Yeah. It's just, well, part of that, though, was over the last 10 years, the game really exploded. And it became so everywhere, so constant, that you could go, even in the summertime, you could go to a bar in June, and people would put on the NFL Network and just be airing old football games. And it just became a little bit too much. I think that's the thing that really wore me out to football and thought, I want to keep football in its box. Then I'll enjoy it.
It was nice when it was like a Sunday noon to six thing.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. I mean, maybe as time goes by, I will be able to, if we really get to a point where we have a frank and open discussion about the risks that happen in this game, I think it would be no different than me or going, all right, I'm going to watch a race car. I'm going to watch a race car driving right now. There could be a car that flips. There could be someone that dies. This could happen. But at least you know. Now everything's out on the table. So all these alpha male athletic guys, you could have gone into something else.
You did
choose to do football. And there, you know, as long as you're staying within the rules of the game.
So in a way,
I guess maybe I can sit there and watch it, but it would be one of those things where you go, not for my kid, not for my kid. In a strange way, no different than a man who enjoys going to a strip club, but knows it's not for his daughters.
Oh, that's a great analogy, but not one I'm willing to even dwell on for any period of time here. In a way, I should be grateful for Mike Adamly and all of these meatheads who are like, I wouldn't do it any differently. Like, they're letting us off the hook.
Sort of, saying,
don't feel badly for me.
True. They are letting you off the hook in that way. Now, there are other athletes I can think. I think Earl Campbell's one of them. And I've heard some other athletes, football players, who have said, man, they never would have done it. Now, but I think you have to be fair to everybody. You have to be fair to the coaches. You have to be fair to the players. You have to be fair to the fans. We didn't know this at the time. Now that we do know it.
Yeah, I don't know about that. It's like my mom used to say that when I was a kid. I'd be like, why did you smoke? And she'd be like, we didn't have warning signs on the cigarette packages. And I'm like, you were putting smoke into your lungs. Even as a child, I didn't buy that.
Right, but
like,
at
you
the
know
time,
that
how,
putting smoke into your lungs isn't a good idea.
I know, but how old was she when she started smoking? Because there used to be a time when there were advertisements like, Dr. Jenkins likes a Pall Mall. And it was like, it's the smooth throat lozenge. Like, they would ask, they would
play it up.
Well,
I know, sure, doctors like, are on TV. Yeah, that's crazy. I know. I feel like the utes, you could tell them that it's going to totally wreck their brains and they'll maybe even gravitate toward it
or,
more.
Well, here's another thing, maybe along the lines of smoking, where people said, we didn't know it, that it was that bad then. Now, when you're looking at people's diet, you're hearing about how awful sugar is for someone's diet.
Yeah, yeah.
Before, it was just like, well, you'll get cavities. Or if you're a kid and you have a Snickers bar, you won't be able to sleep when you go to bed. Yeah. That's kind of what we thought bad was. Now you have doctors and dietitians out there that will tell you sugar is poison.
I say that. And I go, no, dude, the first thing when you get cancer is your oncologist, if they're worth their salt, pardon the pun, they'll say stop eating sugar because that's fuel for cancer cells.
Right.
And so I am a big believer and knower of this, and still my house is teeming with sugar, and I'm powerless to stop it because the boss of the house, like, trucks it in.
Okay, true.
So, yeah, so people can, I'll preach at you about your kid playing football. You could preach at me about, you know, giving my kids cancer fuel.
Right. But to go back and defend your mother, when we were kids, all we thought the worst thing sugar was going to give you was a cavity, or if you ate sugar too late at night, it'd keep you up for a little bit. That was, sugar was bad for you, but that's as bad as it got. Now we're learning there may be something more than that.
Okay. All right.
So this is, I guess this whole show is about exoneration. We're all cleared.
Really?
Cleared to watch football. Cleared to not feel bad about all the damage that sugar has done to us.
Yeah, I don't know.
To not feel bad about smoking.
You're going to let me off the hook for my years of smoking,
nah,
are you?
Nah, I'm just not going to be a hypocrite about that.
I'm not going to let you off the hook for your creepy daddy obsession, Charles.
Oh, I've got one.
Yeah, it's bizarre. And it's bizarre. The strip club comment a second ago, it's all kind of plays into your creepy factor going through the roof these days.
Chicks like creepy. The new girls like creepy.
Daddy Jones next on Jones and Mike. Hey, it's Mike. Please go to jonesandmike.com/survey and take the 2-minute survey we've put together for you. Trust me, it'll be the most satisfying 2 minutes you have all week. We are remaking Jones and Mike in your image. But to do that, we need your input on what you like, what you don't, and what we could do differently, more often, and better. It only takes 2 minutes, and the survey you take today could change your life tomorrow. Go to www.jonesandmike.com/survey. Thanks. Jones's obsession with being someone's daddy, it's got to end. I'm not ever going to call you daddy.
I'm not asking for you to call me daddy or any other men to call me daddy.
It's going to start, but that's the thing. It's going to start bleeding over into all aspects of your life. You realize this.
Well, it is starting to bleed over. It's actually starting to become a comfortable point in my life. And that's what started to make my daddy obsession a little bit odd.
Or tell me about how Daddy Jones came into being.
Well, it's, I'm one of the older gentlemen in my office. And I always thought when I was around, it was funny when I was around the other younger 20-somethings, that I would continually refer to myself as daddy. And it had this kind of creep factor to it that the girls enjoyed. But now the commitment to my daddiness has become so ingrained in a part of our regular everyday office life that now I've noticed the girls at work will just without thinking be like, I'll hand them a folder and be like, thanks, daddy. And then they'll walk off. And now they'll walk off like it was nothing. And now I'm starting to feel a little bit weird about that. Once I could put out there, like once I could control it and something would happen at the office and I'd be like, well, Dandy doesn't like that. I thought it was funny. I liked it. The girls laughed. It was cool. But now all of a sudden, once it's almost sort of become my name and the girls at the office can be like, oh, thanks, Daddy. and not even think about it, almost as though they're referring to me by name. Then it's like, that's a little creepy.
So it started off as you just acknowledging the obvious that you're 10, 15 years older than everyone else in the room.
Yes.
And except for the boss of the place, like right. The top boss is like even older than you, amazingly. And so it started off as you in just a joking fashion, acknowledging the obvious, probably in some sort of a self-deprecating, self-conscious way, trying to draw a laugh out of them at your own expense and therefore kind of normalize and neutralize
right.
the awkward gap in age between you guys.
Yeah, but I've noticed also they love calling me daddy. There was one girl at work that really was not comfortable doing it. But once everyone started, she saw that everyone around the office, it was routine to refer to me as daddy, or that it was routine for me to just openly refer to myself as daddy. Then all of a sudden, I noticed over the last few weeks, she's really come to enjoy it.
You have to like...
There's almost this like sinister lilt to when she uses it like, oh, daddy, let me know when you're done over there. Like she's really come to, you know, she's was very much a PC millennial, but I think she's kind of like, I'm a PC millennial, but I'm digging this daddy thing.
Come over here to daddy's desk and sit on daddy's lap.
Oh, yeah. No,
Let me give your tush a little fanny smacking.
Now, see, I don't go...
There's a sexual angle here.
You went farther than I would go. I would just, it's always just kind of an implied daddiness to the way I conduct myself in the office.
So it started off as just a joke. Then it took on this kind of, you believe on some level, some, even a subconscious level, there's a weird sexuality to it now.
Oh, there is.
And that
definitely.
Maybe a
no
lot
doubt.
Of women of every age kind of have this in them.
A daddy complex?
Yes.
Yes. No, absolutely. So, and this was something that, so I just started organically doing this at the office, bringing about my daddiness. The 20-somethings liked my daddiness. Even the 20-somethings that weren't comfortable with it came to love my daddiness. And I think they love it more than the others. But then when I would start to kind of look around in everyday life, like right now I'm reading about halfway through Carrie Fisher's last book, The Princess Diarist, where she's writing about, it's like all of her diary entries of when she had her affair with Harrison Ford, who was 15. She was 19. Not only was he 15 years her senior, but he was 34. She was 19, which is somehow, even though that is only 15 years, that's more than 15 years. You know, and
oh yeah, emotionally sure yeah, like two generation gaps
right.
there right
so there was I was kind of reading this and I'm like, oh, the daddiness thing, I know all about that. And then George Clooney is now, he is going, I find out this week, he in a mall, he will now be a daddy himself. He's like 15, 20 years older than his lady. Jason Statham this week announced at like 49 years of age, he's becoming a daddy.
Wait a second, and who's he?
Jason Statham is in, he was the transporter. He was the bald-headed guy Fast and the Furious, Snatch. He's got a 29-year-old lady. So the daddiness thing.
Wait, he's a competitive diver, it says.
He was when he was younger.
Jeez.
So he's a competitive diver, but then when he went to Hollywood, he did Snatch and then went into the transporter films and Fast and the Furious.
Whatever happened to Guy Ritchie? Is he still like in England making flicks? And
he did something recently, like a year or two ago, but I can't even remember what it was. No, he's kind of, I think the Madonna thing put him off of really being out in the public eye. I think he was like, look, I liked being the it boy director, but this Madonna thing broke my back. I'm going back behind the camera, staying behind the camera. I don't need to do interviews. That's the sense I get.
Huh. Yeah.
Which is interesting because he wasn't a daddy in that scenario.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was the reverse and he was not happy with it.
Yeah, what
but
they
these
call
other
that?
People,
what's that?
I don't know. You're the kept.
You're a kept man.
Boy. You're the pool boy. I don't know. The cabana boy. He was the cabana boy. He was a cabana boy. He didn't like it. But you look at Statham, Clooney, Harrison Ford, Brian Jones. We love the daddy. It's good.
Dude, so now it's creepy. I want to play this out. So, like, my old lady went on to the Costco.com website and found some Fila shoes for me. And she was telling a coworker, he's like, what did you get your husband for Christmas? He's like a younger guy. What did you get your husband for Christmas? And she's like, oh, I just got him some Fila shoes. And this guy was like, oh, dad shoes. That's pretty cool. And, like, we didn't know that that's, like, an old brand. I didn't know. Didn't know anything about it. I was like, oh, cool shoes. Thanks. No problem. So that's how dad I am now. And so I asked a girl that I work with who's 26 and she confirmed, yeah, those are kind of dad shoes. So now we laugh about it, but now I need to really kind of work that in. I mean, I've referenced wearing the dad shoes before and she does chuckle and
you're already going down the wrong path. You're saying dad. I'm saying daddy.
Well,
it's
right.
Two different
things. But you transitioned from the joke to the sexual lilt, as you said.
I know, but like daddy is commanding. Like now you're going to try to make this footwear, this dated footwear, into something that's commanding, and that will not happen ever. You will just be the dad. But if you're daddy,
how do I flip the script then?
Well, first of all,
stop wearing Fila's.
Stop wearing Fila's.
Are they dad shoes, really?
Stop wearing Fila's. Well, I don't know that they're necessarily dad shoes, but they really haven't been. They really haven't been out in the mainstream since the mid '90s. So I think
I hear New Balance would have been even worse, according to my 26-year-old coworker. She's like, they're not that bad. New Balance is total dad, though.
I don't know. But the main thing is you have to be daddy in your verbalness.
Oh.
You have to own your verbalness. You have to own your daddyism through the words that you use and just your posture. And if you put yourself out there, if you went into your place of work on Monday, this is where you can test it out. And I know you think, oh, I can't do it there because it could go wrong.
No, I care. I got to do it somewhere. Where am I going to do it? Around my kids' friends?
No.
That ain't going to work.
Right. Right, and if it did, it'd be a whole other set of circumstances.
Hey, I'm glad you're overplaying with my daughter. Now call me dad.
Right, no kidding.
I can't even say it with a straight face here.
Yeah, daddy's made pizza rolls. Get over here. No, now if you go into the office on Monday, you just pick out one or two safe ladies where you feel like, I've made an off-color joke here or there. I'll probably be fine with it.
Yeah.
And you find a reason to approach them, and you go, Hey, Sylvia, I can't figure out, I'm trying to read this form here. I can't figure out what time we're supposed to have this meeting. Daddy's confused. Can you help him? I think you will find right away. They love that dynamic. Because here's the thing, like,
there's no way I can do this.
No, you can't. You absolutely can't. I do it. I do it all the time.
There's no way.
No, you absolutely can do it.
Fired. You are gonna laugh when I get fired.
Well, no, just do a pick. There's gotta be one or two safe girls at work where you can go, I could try out the daddy line. And it will work. Because I think really here's why it works. What women are most attracted to in men is when a man has something about himself. He could be a football player. He could be a successful stockbroker. He could be a musician. But he has something that's definable. Women would be open to, by referring to yourself as daddy, you're establishing yourself as the older man. That's unique. That's different. You're now not just a coworker who, I guess now that I think about it, is older than me. You're going up to them and you're saying, I'm an older man. And that goes off into their brain. They're able to put you into a box. They're able to process you, and they are able to, that's attractive to them, that you come with a tag, that you come with a label. Daddy's a label. Women like labels. Women like men in uniform, and they like men with labels. Daddy's a label.
I like what you're saying here, just because it sounds like you've really thought this through.
And it's worked. I've never, even to the one girl at work where I went, oh, the daddy thing's not going to work. The daddy thing's taken off.
And, like, have you ever, like, had a discussion with any of your, you know,
and
confidants there? Like, hey, about this, what do you think?
Oh, where I'm saying, like, is
or it's
okay?
Been brought up?
Is
yeah,
it okay that I'm saying? No, I've never asked for it.
But you're saying that's the secret sauce of being the daddy is daddy doesn't ask for permission.
Daddy doesn't ask for anything.
I can't. It's so effing creepy,
and
dude.
How I just say it, how I just said it to you, is how I say it at work. I will.
You're giving me the daddy thing.
Absolutely, absolutely. Jesus. If I'm having an argument with someone at the office, I have and will continue to say, "Daddy doesn't care about that."
Dude, it's the third person nature of it too that is so creepy. It's one thing for them to call you daddy.
Yes, and
but it's, you by referring to yourself in the third person as daddy is like mental illness.
It's great though. Now the only time where I'm going, oh my god, it's sort of, it's not Breaking Bad, but it does feel weird, is when they say daddy without thinking about it. When they say daddy consciously, it still kind of works. But whenever they're just like, hey daddy, could you pass me that mug? And they're just addressing me as though they were to say, hey, Brian, could you pass me that mug? That's when it's like, ooh, it's gone to another level.
Has it ever aroused you?
Has saying daddy ever or aroused
any,
me?
Any part of this daddy transaction, the saying or the getting it?
No. Well,
you've never been like, oh, it just got tight down there.
No, for me.
Daddy
for
likes
me,
that.
No. But there is a, you know, when you're at a party, and you're telling a great story or you're being really funny and you're getting that energy back from the people around you, where it's you're kind of the it guy.
Mm-hmm.
Being daddy creates that at a moment's notice.
So your position is that people should just be doing this all the time, looking for little ways, even if it's not this specifically.
It's
your daddy and get your daddy on.
Yes. And it's easy. And here's the thing. It's almost as though if you saw a girl that you were attracted to at a party and you went up to her and said, hey, you want to go in the next room and make out? She'll either agree to it and go do that, or she'll look at you shocked. And then you have the out clause of being like, I was just kidding, because it seems so absurd. Going up to someone and referring to yourself as daddy, it's brilliant in that it has this element of tongue in cheek, but also commanding presence at the same time.
Man, I hope that line of thought holds water in the HR department when I'm being written up for termination.
Well, I'm not saying that
insisted.
I can't promise that won't happen to you, but is there one girl at work where you go, I could think, she can take a joke.
Yeah, the one who I've talked to about my dad's shoes and so forth. So maybe I've already kind of crossed that Rubicon. And I can't with her. Or maybe that sets it up that it's a joke so perfectly that now if she's like,
no,
what's that?
You want her to forget the whole dad thing. Daddy right. is different than dad.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But I don't think you have to worry about like making an effort to cleanse the palate and get rid of the dad thing and establish the daddy thing. But I think if you go in tomorrow morning and you just come up with a question, just say, Stephanie, look,
That's her name, too. That's so weird. That's daddy. Like, you read my mind, Daddy.
Daddy knows what's up. So you go in there.
Have
and
you been
you go,
reading my diary, Daddy?
And then you go into the office on Monday, and then you just go, man, I cannot. Stephanie, I cannot find the manual. I have to go into this meeting, and they want us to bring in our employee's manual. Daddy is lost here. Can you give him some help?
Does daddy have to be doddering when you say daddy? Like, it sounds like daddy's confused, daddy can't find something.
Oh, no. If you have a reason to say, even better. I'm thinking, because here's the thing. If you're going to approach somebody, typically it's a question. So that's why I'm going with that.
Okay.
Now, if you have a if there's some policy.
Can't it be like, daddy doesn't like that
yes,
one bit?
Yes, yes. If you
daddy's
have a policy.
Daddy's putting his foot
down. Yes, that's the best way to do it, but I don't know what your situation is to get you there. Now, if you can go into the office on Monday and you can think of a policy you don't like.
That's right.
And you can be like, Stephanie, I'm telling you, this new, whatever it is, this new time check-in system, daddy is not liking this. That's when you can use it. When you can say something definitive or comment.
Am I looking for her to
Or if you guys are supposed to go to a meeting. If you can go into a if you guys are supposed to go into a meeting on Monday morning, it's 9 o'clock. It's the meeting's at 9 o'clock. It's 8:57. You walk in there. Hey, Stephanie, daddy doesn't like being late. Let's go. That's the best. If you're able to do that, that's preferable. Oh my God. I say it constantly.
You're insane.
I refer to myself as daddy. If I do it once, I do it 10 times a day. I'm telling you, and that's the best way to do it if you can. Commanding, you're disgruntled about something.
I guess I'm wondering,
telling something
what the
end
game is, outside of what you just described, where you feel like you're the it guy. It feels like there should be a sexual end game here.
Well, you can definitely play it to that end. You can't participate in that
ever.
But I can tell you, I am positive that it makes me more relevant in that arena. By doing that. And that comes down to the female mindset, that they like the older commanding presence. Maybe it's just the commanding presence, but there's something about the older guy, the label, something definable that they like. That would definitely, it definitely puts you in that category if that's what you want it to be. If you have that openness. Now, if you really carried it to that level as a married man, it might creep out some ladies, but it might still work. It will still work. It will still work on some lady. For some lady's going to be all about it. Lady.
So what you're saying holds water, but I'll try this, I guess, only because I want to verify if you're insane or not. And I put my family in a precarious financial situation because I lost my gig over it, that'll really suck.
It's down to who you choose to experiment with, but it sounds like this girl that you're working with is safe, that you can try some daddiness on her. And I will be shocked if you don't reach out to me and go, it worked sensationally.
Daddy experiment went well, Jones. You are not insane.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, isn't that like the prototypical name of a woman that would probably respond to the daddy thing? Stephanie. Like, that just sounds like...
And maybe that's instinctively...
Just
that's
sounds
just
like your daughter, right?
Yeah.
Sounds like somebody who wants to be daddy.
Well, you gotta let me know how Stephanie takes to your daddiness. Because my ladies love my daddiness.
Please go to jonesandmike.com/survey and take the two-minute survey we've put together for you. Trust me, it'll be the most satisfying 2 minutes you have all week. We are remaking Jones and Mike in your image. But to do that, we need your input on what you like, what you don't, and what we could do differently, more often, and better. It only takes 2 minutes, and the survey you take today could change your life tomorrow. Go to www.jonesandmike.com/survey. Thanks. Jones and Mike. Daddy could use your help.
Daddy does need some help.
Daddy is Daddy's the man in any situation, but Daddy's not above asking for help and for input. As the dad of the family, the dad gets everyone around the table. And sometimes the family, you know, kind of votes on things. And that's what Jones and Mike is gonna do with you. Daddy needs your input at jonesandmike.com. We're going through a metamorphosis, if you will. But we don't want to end up like Black Sabbath, where we're just doing the same thing for decades. Who wants to be like them? They just had their final show the other night in somewhere in Europe, I want to say, Jones. I was a little sad to see that.
Yeah, I saw the footage of that. I forget where it was, but I did see the footage.
Yeah, like some town I'd never heard of or some place I'd never heard of, but it brought a tear to my eye on the one hand. On the other hand, it's kind of like, man, oh man, just decades of doing the same songs. Who wants to do that?
Again and again.
And again.
And again.
Right. So we have a survey on jonesandmike.com. We're going to push it out on Facebook. You're hearing about it now, where we want your input on what this show can be, is, what you want it to be, how we can change it for the better, and how it can include you in what we do. And if... And maybe, and I don't know, if there's a question on the survey, maybe there needs to be a question. Should we quit? Should this end?
Never. Daddy is not ready to call it quits. Daddy wants to go for it.
Yeah, I mean, if you put your thinking cap on, you can do this survey in 2 minutes or less. And, you know, of the things in this world you can do that only take 2 minutes, this is going to be one of the more gratifying ones, I believe. More productive. really. Why? What takes two minutes?
That's true. That's super productive.
Yeah. What takes 2 minutes? Like, you can't even fill up your gas tank in 2 minutes.
That's true.
This is just going to take no time, but it will be very helpful in helping us shape Jones and Mike Mach 2.
Yes. This is 2017 is supposed to be, we have planned it out to be the biggest year in Jones and Mike history.
This is year four?
We're going into year four. When we started broadcasting, when we started recording a show and putting it out to the world, that was January of 2014.
Oh, my heavens.
So you're looking all of 14, all of 15, all of 16. We're going through 17. We're going through year four.
Right. And it's been in different iterations over time, but we want to improve it, and we need to loop in the people that check it out. And so there's no better way than please, we implore you. We don't really have any bribes. I don't know if that's a problem. I don't know if your daddiness, Jones, is going to be enough to get people to do this.
It's been so far.
And then we also need you to kind of share it. So we've also done that over time. Share.jonesandmike.com, do the Become Executive. And some people did it, and it was nice. And I think people did it, and they didn't, like, tell us that they did it. And so, and thanks. But in this way, if you know anybody that digs this or what we do or what we're trying to do, what are we trying to do? Well, we'd like to do what we're doing right now, this show. We'd like to do it more often, longer, and better. And by better, like, you know, but we need to know what better means. Does better mean doing different topics? Does better mean having guests on? Does better mean doing live shows? What does better mean? What do you want? What do you listen to? So, like, you listen to Rogan, Jones?
I listen to Joe Rogan's podcast.
And you listen to Stern?
I do. I listen to Stern on satellite. I listen to Rogan online. And I would like to get into that category. Who doesn't like to do things, as you say, longer and better and more often?
That's right. And what are the things that you like about those shows what other shows besides those?
Well, to be honest with you, the biggest thing that attracts me to those shows is those gentlemen seem to have and take advantage of the freedom of their broadcasts, meaning they're genuinely who they are on the air. They don't really seem to be beholden to anyone else or any particular agenda. And it's a really honest broadcast. Even take, for example, if you were to examine Joe Rogan's podcast, 2-3 times a week, he's interviewing someone for 3 hours. Now, some people may say, oh my God, 3 hours with someone, that is a crazy amount of time. But the beauty that I see in that show is he's doing the show that he wants to do, and he's being himself. And I feel like after listening to that show, someone who I have no idea, I don't know this man at all, I now feel like I know him. And I think to me, that's the great attraction of that show. You get to hear someone be completely honest. And because they have a certain amount of independence to them, a lot of independence, They can be honest.
Yeah,
they don't come across very protected or...
Yeah, I always felt that way listening to Stern, which I don't anymore. Just too cheap. But only because they kept ratcheting the dough up on me. Like, I was willing to spend $15 a month, and then it became more and more.
Mm-hmm.
And to get less and less, right? And then he wasn't around very often either. And I was like, well, now you guys are just keep on trapping me into longer and more, you know, more dough and all that. And it used to be available on the app. Now I'm going to have to spend more. Like, they wanted me to get a car thing. And I'm like, why are you making this so effing difficult? I just want it really for this one show. And all the rest of your channels almost have no bearing on the situation. It's just Howard. I just want access to this one guy's content. But the one thing I liked about him was it felt like the guests that were on. I'm not a big fan of guests, but at least when the guests were on, I've always liked them more after the interview. So, in other words, I felt like I was genuinely getting to know them.
Right.
And I feel like it's almost become a self-fulfilling prophecy where Stern became famous for being the place where people and the guy that could talk to you and you would let your guard down. He'd get things out of you. He's a great interviewer and la, la, la. I don't even really feel that anymore. I feel it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. People are like, you know what? I'm going to go in one place to one guy and bear all. And this is the only place I'll do it.
Right. And I've heard celebrities so much as say that.
Oh, okay. Well, it's good to feel validated in that way. But you've almost said, like, every now and then you feel like Stern's not being genuine. Like, he's kind of doing, he's fawning over James Taylor, calling him an inspiration, and he's kind of kissing his ass, or he's doing it for an ulterior motive.
Well, I think what we're learning about Howard, and that I think it can be somewhat disappointing for hardcore Howard fans, is for all these years, he branded himself as the freak show and the outsider. Now we're seeing that maybe he wanted to be the cool kid all along. And that is kind of tough to see. So that's where I have a struggle with that, because he does seem to want to be loved by Hollywood, where previously he didn't care if he was loathed by Hollywood. But it seems like now later in his career, he's coming to the end. He kind of wants to be, and maybe, I don't know, maybe it's just that you get to the end and you kind of just want to go out a little more positive. You want to be liked. But it does seem now that there's been this change around, and he wants to be a part of the in crowd. He likes that he was invited to Jennifer Aniston's wedding, where, I mean, 20 years ago, that would be unimaginable that he would be invited anywhere around Jennifer Aniston.
Well, right. He would use it as fuel for his show to be like the bad boy and to hell with her and screw her and all that.
Yes.
Yeah, probably it's a thing about legacy when you're at his age, when you're in your 60s and up, where you start to think, like, how am I going to make sure that I'm remembered forever? And maybe he's made the calculation as, you know, kind of like, you know, when sports guys are left out of the Hall of Fame because they weren't friends with the sports writers. He's like, well, I'll be friends with the sports writers here at the end so that I'm always remembered in a fond light. Well, by and large, regardless, that we both are attracted to shows like his because they seem to be independent. Like, I almost loathe radio in general. And I've loathed, honestly, being on the radio recently because you're just so constrained by what everybody else wants you to do. And, you know, people, you know, are shaping what you're saying and doing from the producer's booth. You know, they're kind of, you know, we're at their beck and call instead of the other way around. And it's like, well, no, it's not supposed to be this way. It's supposed to be like a genuine, organic exchange between hosts and the guest, between hosts, guests, and the audience, and it shouldn't be driven by some snotty-nosed producer, I don't think. And that's another reason why I always liked Howard, because he always fought against the suits, and the suits are always the people who are shaping the content and driving it towards sales and all of this stuff. So independence is something that we value, and being genuine is something that we value, and we'd like to continue that. And maybe that'll be on the radio. Maybe we'll find the right opportunity and the right environment to do that on the radio.
Yeah, I think you can.
But I don't know that it's even, and that'd be great, but I don't think it's the end-all be-all. And I think that this, what we do, can be independent of what we do on the radio. Like, this could be something that's daily. This could be something that's a podcast. This could be a live show. This could be a video show. This could be on your phone. This could be all of those things. But we're still kind of trying to figure out what you, the listener, would like it to be. So your input at jonesandmike.com would be essential. It takes 2 minutes to let us know, and we're going to try to share the evolution of this with you. Well, we're definitely going to do that because it's going to have to be that way. We're going to have support in order to continue to do this. And there's a comment section, so there's, you know, it's a two-minute survey. It only took a couple of minutes when I did it, but I know all the answers, so it's easy. I had the answer key in front of me. But there's like a comment thing in the bottom, general comments, and so if you hate the music we use, if you hate the topics, whatever you want to say freeform, use that space at the bottom. But for the most part, it's kind of like a multiple choice, and like, how strongly do you feel? Did you take the quiz, Jones?
I've not taken the quiz.
Oh, all right. Well,
I've read the quiz.
How do you feel generally about quizzes where they ask you how strongly you feel about something? You know, on a scale from 1 to 5, do those bother you?
No, I don't think so. Why? I don't see how that would bother you.
Do you find yourself always answering in the middle? 3.
I do try to be very careful about that. I do because I know that's very important, the number that you attach to those answers is very important. So I do try to be accurate about that. I just don't either go one or five or all the way down. 3, 3, 3, 3, 3.
Yeah, yeah. I always try to go on one side or the other. I'm like, oh, it does not help them if they're getting nothing but answer C.
Right.
So yeah, but hey, fill it out any way you want. We're going to try to analyze the data. We'll share the results. If the results are, we'd like it if you only did this once a year or not at all, then so be it. Well, or maybe we'll do it just to spite you.
Yeah, daddy's not stopping.
No, maybe daddy won't listen to you, and that'll be your just desserts. I'm excited to find out what people have to say.
I am excited as well. Daddy can't.
Yeah, this needs to be a two-way street. It can't be, you know, this isn't a monologue, Jones. This is a dialogue.
It's true.
My Facebook page is a monologue. I don't want to discuss with you there. I put things up. I don't really want to hear what you have to say in response.
This is a little different.
This, I'm actually asking for your input. I'm demanding it, in fact. I'm not going to do it in Jones's inimitable, creepy way, though.
I'm telling you, you got to give it a shot. Can you just, will you at least promise me that you'll try a little daddiness tomorrow at the office space?
No, I'll definitely try it, and okay. I want to see what happens. But again, only insofar as I want to know if what you're saying has any validity at all.
Now, the only thing I will say, before you try to bust out a daddy on a lady at work, you've just got to let it hang. You can't say, hey, daddy's ready to go to this meeting, let's go. What do you think of me calling you daddy?
Right.
You can't. You've just got, boom, daddy's out there and daddy's staying and see how they react.
Yeah, I think that you're being single. I think that matters in this equation.
We'll see. We'll see.
All right. Take the survey. Daddy implores you. Take the survey at jonesandmike.com.
Daddy's watching.